Good afternoon, and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg, and we're live from 2 to 3 on weekday afternoons. And if you'd like to be a part of the program, I invite you to call me at this toll-free number, 1-800-438-5090. Now, we have no calls waiting, so this is a time you can get right through if you want to call us, 1-800-438-5090. If you have a question about the Bible or a question about the Christian faith or a difference of opinion from the host on something you've heard said here on the program, feel free to give me a call and we can talk about it forthwith. And like I say, there's no calls waiting, so you can get right through if you do it right now. Later in the program, it's not necessarily going to be quite as easy. I want you to know that the Narrow Path has a website that is loaded with resources that are free to you. There's nothing for sale at the website. We don't sell anything on the program. We have no sponsors. We take no commercial breaks. We just do 1 hour of programming. We would like to call it ministry each day. Also, I have a morning version of the program. It's a half hour long from 9:30 to 10, but it can't be heard on these same stations. You have to pretty much go to the website and hear that. But the website is thenarrowpath.com. And if you go there, you'll find that there's all kinds of MP3 files, like hundreds of them, that you can download for free of lectures, teaching verse by verse through the Bible, teaching on several different topics. And all of that is free at the website. So check that out at thenarrowpath.com. And besides the MP3 files that are there, you'll find other kinds of resources. There's written resources, magazine articles I've written on various subjects. There's even my comic books. Yeah, I used to be a cartoonist, and there's comic books that are discipleship manuals, which you can just read online, or you can download them, and that is, you can print them out and use them. Use them for Sunday school curriculum. You know, frankly, the comic books are written for young adults, and one of the places they've been very well received is in prison ministries. But people of all ages have looked at those, and if you've never checked those out, go to the website, thenarrowpath.com, and just click on the comic books link, and you'll find those there. All kinds of stuff, different kinds of things. The number to call if you'd like to be with me is 1-800-438-5090. And we're going to talk to Lori, first of all, from Portland, Oregon. Hi, Lori. Welcome.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've heard you say several times, and I agree that there is no specific day God doesn't care if you worship on. Sorry, I just was moving around a lot. If you worship on Saturday or on Sunday or even on another day. But my question is, nonetheless, should we be setting aside, as even though it's not under the law, but just like it's not under the law not to eat pork and such things, it's for our health to, you know, to follow that. And so is that so for setting aside a day of worship?
Well, you know, when God gave the law, he said that he gave these laws for Israel's benefit. He says, for your good always. And it may be that there are, in many of the laws, advantages that God knows about that we don't. For example, circumcision and the eating of clean foods rather than unclean foods are believed to have certain hygienic and health advantages that, of course, Israel would not have known about. And they were told to practice these things because of a command of God for ceremonial reasons, but God may have had in his mind, you know, things that we don't know about that make those good for us. Many people have said that it's an optimal work schedule for the human personality and the human body to work 6 days and to rest on one. And so it may be that that's a good idea. Now, what's a good idea and what's required are not necessarily the same thing, of course. And so if we're talking about what's required, I don't think the New Testament sets aside any particular day of rest for us, or even a special day of worship. I believe that in the New Testament, the Christians met daily from house to house breaking bread and in fellowship and hearing, listening to the apostles' teaching and so forth and praying. So their worship days were every day in Acts chapter 2, rather than one particular day of the week. But since most people, because of their work schedules and so forth, would find it difficult to gather with other Christians every day of the week, it's more convenient for many to gather one day or two or three days out of the week. Probably most Christians these days don't gather more than once a week. But at times where there's been a somewhat more vigorous Christian faith, churches just have two or three meetings a week, and sometimes people go to all those. But there's nothing there. This is all just a matter of, you know, what works out. What do you need for your spiritual life? It doesn't really boil down to some kind of a law about regular meetings.
Yeah, and I'm not so. I guess my question is more about the day of rest aspect of it, because I know some Seventh-day Adventists, and believe me, their day of worship is anything but a day of rest. I mean,
really?
They may purpose not to cook on that day, or do you know, go to the store or those kind of things, but they are at church morning, noon, and night. That's not restful. So,
yeah. Well, maybe to them it is. I wouldn't necessarily find it restful either. But you're right. I mean, the Sabbath in the Old Testament was primarily for resting, not primarily for going to worship meetings. It's true that the law did say that the Jews should have a holy convocation, which would mean a gathering, on the Sabbath. But that is mentioned a few times. But what is mentioned all the time with reference to Sabbath is that it's a rest from work. So it would be possible that our religious observances might cancel out the actual purpose of the date and give someone no rest at all.
So do you set aside a day personally for rest?
No, I don't. No, I don't. I get enough rest, I think, but my ministry can happen any day of the week. You know, for example, I do radio shows 6 days a week. The only day I don't have a radio show is Saturday. But Saturday is sometimes a day of travel. Sometimes it's a day I'm teaching someplace. You know, I mean, I don't have one day a week that I. Well, I mean, my work is ministry, of course, and even the priests on the Sabbath day worked because it was their ministry to do so.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm saying all that because I really myself have struggled with setting aside a day of rest, and even though I'm not working right now, I somehow don't know how to rest. If I lay around, I just feel so guilty, no matter how worn out and tired I am and how much I need to lay around.
Well, maybe you're a workaholic, are you?
I don't think so, because I have health issues and I'm worn out and sick a lot. But
Well, you should feel, you know, probably cultivating the ability to rest is probably a good spiritual discipline for you. You probably should take a day at least and rest and just make yourself do nothing but just contemplate God and pray and do things.
Worship,
I mean, those would be things that would probably be very good for you physically and spiritually.
Okay. Well, then you've answered my question, and I thank you.
Okay, Lori. Thanks for your call.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Okay, our next caller is Stan from Las Vegas, Nevada, and we have lines open for you also at 1-800-438-5090. That's 1-800-438-5090 if you want to be on the program. You're listening to The Narrow Path. My name is Steve Gregg, and Stan, welcome. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Steve. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I originally called about signs in the heaven and the sun, the moon, and the sky and all that, but can I give a brief comment about the previous sister who just called?
Sure.
If she's still listening.
She probably is. I don't know.
Yeah. The Sabbath day, it's not meant to be a chore. It's meant to be a delight. And it just means that the ordinary garbage, routine, mechanical things that you do all the time, like wash the dishes or wash the car or cut the grass or do the laundry, all those mechanical things, you have 6 days of the week to do them and do them in those 6 days. But on the seventh day, you don't do those things. You don't worry about taking the trash out and cleaning the dog bowl or whatever. And once you look at it in that way, it causes you to focus on the creation of the universe and your purpose in the universe. Because your mind isn't cluttered up about all these daily, routine, humdrum, very boring, tedious tasks. And it's very liberating because on that day, you don't worry about the washing the car or doing the dishes.
Yeah.
And you will start to focus on the creation of the universe, and you might start reading the Bible or reading a book you really want to read and talking to your neighbor or going for a walk and noticing the bird in the sky and the moon. And it's a delight. It's not something you have to be miserable about.
Well, a person might start focusing on those things, but they might not. I mean, just because you don't do your normal chores doesn't mean you'll start thinking about edifying things. That's something you have to decide to do. And in many cases, you can do that even when you are washing dishes and mowing the lawn. You see, here's the thing.
I disagree with that, but you have a right to your opinion.
Okay, well, yeah, you said that those are disgusting, awful chores. If a person sees those activities as the service they're providing to the Lord, by, for example, serving their family or something like that, then serving the Lord isn't an awful thing. Now, I used to have to support myself. I was in the ministry part time, but I'd work at a job supporting myself, and I usually would do those kinds of awful jobs on purpose because I loved to. I loved to wash floors, wash windows, clean bathrooms. Because it didn't require a lot of thought on my part, and I was able to meditate on God and think about those very things that you're talking about. To me, I loved mundane chores because they didn't require me to think about anything other than God.
Okay, I guess that was very functional for you. I think we're more American than we are Bible people because America, with its predatory capitalistic system where time is money, it pushes us to think 24/7, never relax, always to have a to-do list, and 7 days a week to have that to-do list. And I think God was saying in Exodus, hey, you've got 6 out of 7 days to do all this stuff. One day, take a break from it and just go for a walk. Talk to your neighbor. You'll notice a bird. If you're doing dishes, you can't be noticing a bird. Get in quiet. Get silence. And it truly, truly becomes a delight on that day. And you break away from this predatory world of capitalism, of materialism, of making money, and your thoughts turn to other things, you will solve problems, you will get closer to God, and it truly becomes a delight to you. But
okay, that's your testimony. Go ahead.
Now, we're supposed to look at signs in the heavens and the sky, going back to the book of Genesis, the book of Revelation, Joel, and everywhere, including the Hebrew word, the matzarot, with the constellations and the position of the heavens. Have you heard of two things? Have you heard of up in the sky these observations known as chemtrails?
Yes, I've seen them.
Okay. Do you believe that they're real, that they are chemical trails being sprayed for some secret purpose?
Well, that's my suspicion. I don't have any authoritative information about it.
Okay. Have you heard of this planetary body or a comet that's been seen by NASA called Elenin.
No, I have not.
E-L-E-N-I-N. It has a 3,600-year cycle. It has lined up when we had the terrible Japanese earthquake, the Chile earthquake, the Haiti earthquake, and the Australian earthquake. It has been in alignment with Earth, and it's called either a brown dwarf planet or a comet, and it's called Elenin. You haven't heard about that?
No, I have not. What am I supposed to know about it?
Well, you heard of, in Revelation, it's been called by different names, Wormwood, Nibiru. You've heard of Planet X?
Well, in Revelation, I don't read about Planet X. There is a star that falls to the ground called Wormwood, and it's said to be the angel of the bottomless pit. That's in Revelation, but Planet X is not mentioned in Revelation.
Oh, yes, it's Planet X, but it's gone by different names. You've heard of Nibiru?
I'm not sure that I have.
Okay, well, maybe some of your listeners. This Elenin that's been seen out there, it's been told to us by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. It is up there, and there is scientific facts behind it. NASA has told us about it, but in a way they haven't told us about it because on their website, they have a black...
Okay, I'm curious to know what this has to do with, you know, the issues that we talk about on this program, which have to do with the Christian faith.
It's signs in the heavens and the sky about stuff that's going on with all the earthquakes and the horrific tsunamis, the volcanic activity, the wobble of the planet, a possible pole shift. This is incredible.
Okay, so if it's a sign in the sky, what is its meaning? Signs have meanings.
Oh, that I'm asking you or your callers maybe to help me, but I think it means God's wrath is coming down big time on the planet and on America. You wouldn't agree with that?
Well, I don't know whether to agree or not. I don't have any problem with the idea. I mean, to my mind, God's wrath has been overdue for a long time. So if God's wrath is coming now, that's fine. But I'm not sure how we would know that from the presence of a planet that comes around, what'd you say, every 130-something years?
Every 3,600 years.
Oh, I see, every 3,600 years. Okay.
Yes.
So when it came 306, when it came 3,600 years ago, was that a sign of something?
Yeah, it lines up with the Exodus from Egypt, which is a huge sign for the Bible and God the Father and the Son, the Holy Spirit.
Well, that should be a couple hundred years before the Exodus, I would think. But what did that now? How did that sign, that planet, affect the Exodus?
I don't know. It could have been the plagues upon the Egyptians, the severe plagues. We're in a way, we're seeing the plagues of similar nature occurring here on Earth with the pestilences, the colony collapse of the bees. You know, the bees are collapsing. The die-off of fish. All over the world, we're seeing die-off of fish and birds and things of going on of a quirky nature. Right now, we have in America a nuclear power plant just north of Omaha, Nebraska, that has been invaded by the Missouri floodwater. It's at a level 4 emergency, and the major media is totally, totally ignoring it while they focus on this scandal of Congressman Wiener. See, so that in and of itself is a sign of the satanic major media distracting us from what's really going on. But I'll get off the air. I just wanted to bring Elenin to the attention of you and your good audience. And it's good that you do know the chemtrails, because most people think we're crazy when we've done research and we see the chemtrails. And they're pretty.
Oh, yeah, I've known about the chemtrails for years. Yeah.
Right, right. Do you think that's something we should look at, because they are poisoning us with strontium, aluminum oxide, and barium oxide? And this is very, very bad for our lungs and our health.
Well, sure it is, and I think it's a very bad thing, but I'm not sure how that has to do with the Christian life in particular. I mean, the world is a dangerous place, and some of the dangers are man-made, like the chemtrails. Some of them are not man-made, like the earthquakes and the tsunamis. But to me, it seems like the Christian message is we don't have to live in fear, because although the world is a dangerous place, it is not our permanent destiny. It's not our permanent destiny.
Oh, I
and
agree.
We all expect to die, at least I do, and I expect everyone who's listening to me to die. So if we're planning to die anyway, I'm not really sure, you know, how these particular phenomena affect our Christian commitments.
Well, I think if our health is affected by satanic forces with the spraying of chemtrails, we in the body of Messiah, we should react and tell our fellow believers, tell the powers to be, to cut this out. We're not a bunch of cockroaches that we should be sprayed with strontium and aluminum oxide and barium oxide. Many believers, their health is being negatively affected by this. And
well, I agree. I agree with you about that. I think that the chemtrails are a bad thing, and I think that people should be disapproving of them. I wonder, though, what you think we can actually do about them. We don't even know who's behind them, except it seems like every government in the world is behind them, because you can get photographs of them over the sky and over every continent. So, I mean, who are you going to send your complaint to?
Well, we have, according to the charts, we have the FAA, we have Congress, we have the Weather Bureau, we have meteorology.
And you think they care?
We have the EPA. Do you think
they care about what we think about that stuff? Do you think that they don't know about the chemtrails? And do you think that they think they're doing it because we like it?
Exactly. But if 99.9% of the people don't know of the chemtrails, and the major media has a blackout on it, well, then this could be very well a satanic attack on the nation, on the believers. And I think Father God.
Well, how should we respond to satanic attacks?
Well, we could engage in mass prayer. We could tell.
Yeah, that's true.
We could do a nonviolent sit-in at every TV station in America, and tell them focus on the chemtrails. Tell the people about the chemtrails, and give Arnold Schwarzenegger and Congressman Wiener a blackout on them.
Well, let me ask you this. So you think that the message we should be giving the world is an anti-chemtrails message right now?
No, I think that people should be made aware of the attack. I believe it is a satanic attack on the body of Messiah, on our health, on our thinking. Just like the fluoride in the water is damaging our brains, making us somewhat more passive. The GMO foods that they're doing.
Now, I can see, Stan, why you need to take a day off of normal time to think about God and to think about nature, because it seems like the rest of the time you're focusing on things that are really unedifying.
No, see, I'm focusing on things that you are terrified to tell your audience for some reason. You need to look at yourself.
Excuse me. What am I terrified to tell my audience?
You don't want to tell your audience about this for some reason, so you have just told me
now,
that I am doing God's work.
Now just a minute, Stan. Stan, hang on a minute. What is it I'm afraid to tell my audience about? I'm not quite following you.
I just told your audience about the chemtrails, about the GMO foods.
Now, why would you say I'm afraid to tell my audience about those things?
Because you just made me seem like I'm stupid for focusing on this.
No, I didn't say you're stupid. I said I don't really see that as the message of the Christian church.
Why not? It's affecting our health. I mean, you have a right to your opinion, not to focus on it, but you've never mentioned the chemtrails or these things to your audience. It's the duty of the pastors to tell the people what is going on, how they are being attacked, and maybe how we can alert our fellow non-believers about these things to stop it. I mean, our health, nothing is more important than our health.
Well, if I was afraid for my audience to know about this, do you think I would have let you go on for 15 minutes about it without stopping you?
Maybe you're not afraid, but for some reason you have ignored this, which is...
You said I'm terrified.
Well, I think you are, because you never brought it up. I may be terrified is too strong, but why don't you bring this up to your audience?
You know, I know something funny. I got an email once from someone who said he thinks I'm supported by the Church of Satan because he's never heard me bring up the Church of Satan on the program.
No, that's ridiculous. You've done a lot of good work.
But don't you see what you're saying? You're saying because I've never brought it up, I'm terrified to talk about it. Do you know what this program is? It's a program where people call and they select the topics. You selected the topic of chemtrails, and it's been talked about. Most people don't bring that up. So, I mean, what I talk about on the program is not determined by me. It's determined by the callers.
Well, you tried to use a little bit of derision you need to take a day off from this stuff. This is very...
Well, no, I honestly believe that. I really see why you're saying that you need to take a day off to think about birds and about nature, because it does sound like you're pretty wound up pretty tight most of the time. If you can take a day off from that and relax, I think that'll be good for you.
Well, that might be good advice, but I hope you take into account what I've said and, be glad that I bring this up to your audience. And nobody else is telling them about the genetically modified foods. God caused the flood because man was genetically screwing up with the DNA. I mean,
how do you know that?
More important than that.
Wait, how do you know that?
Have you ever read Genesis where the...
Actually, I have, yes. I don't remember the genetically modified DNA.
God caused the flood because man had totally played with the DNA.
Where does it say anything about DNA?
Well, the word DNA is not in there, but Genesis 6 said we damaged the gene pool. We caused a hybridization of a...
No, it doesn't say that.
Scholars believe that's exactly why...
Well, I know that many scholars believe that angels mated with men. That's not exactly men messing with the gene pool. It's angels messing with it if that happened. I don't believe it's talking about angels, but let's say it is. Let's say the sons of God who married the daughters of men, that those are angels. Now, is that man messing with the gene pool, or is that angels messing with it? Are you saying the women kind of invited the angels to come down and mix their genes with theirs or something?
Well, there was some kind of a mixing with the man became a hybrid in many cases, and he was going to continue to be a hybrid. Whether the women...
I don't think the Bible says that.
Okay, well, we're welcome to disagree with that, but God in Genesis chapter 1, he says, you know, don't mix this with that.
Okay. No, that's Deuteronomy.
I'm sorry?
You're talking about Deuteronomy, where he says don't sow your field with two different kinds of crops.
Well, I think it's in very clear in Genesis 1, but right now man is splicing fish genes with plants, plant genes with animals. This is tampering with God's precious DNA, and there's not a single pastor in America or a radio talk show host who wants to bring this to the attention of the people.
That's not true. That is not true. Alex Jones brings it to the people hours every day. My friend, Dr. Stan Monteith, brings this kind of stuff to people's attention several hours a day. There's lots of people on Christian and secular radio stations bringing this stuff up to the people.
Well, Alex Jones is not a pastor. Stan Monteith, yeah, he's a secular guy, but he does blend theology, which is very good. But maybe you could think of alerting the people.
I don't know that that's the pastor's calling.
Maybe we just agree to disagree on that. I think it is absolutely
okay. What do you think the pastor's calling is described in Scripture?
Anything that affects people's lives, especially as precious as our health, the vaccination of our children, the pastor should be up in arms.
Okay, see, I honestly don't think that the pastor's job is to be a health advisor. Now, if he knows something that will help people's health, I think it's fine for him to share. I believe that the pastor's duty is what Jesus said, to go and make disciples, teaching them to observe everything Jesus commanded. I don't think the pastors are doing that. But if they did, they'd be doing what a pastor should be doing. If the pastors want to get involved in all kinds of activism and telling people that they should be very afraid, well, they can do that if they want to. I don't think that's what we're assigned to do. The most often command in Scripture is do not be afraid. In fact, we're forbidden to be afraid. We're forbidden to be anxious about anything. Sounds like you're very anxious. Now, I know about chemtrails. I know about GMOs. I don't like them. I don't like chemtrails. I wish they weren't being done. I don't like GMOs. What's that?
Why don't you tell the people? Would you have your...
I just did. I just did. Didn't you hear me? I just did.
I've listened to you a lot. I've never heard you... on your own, initiate the conversation on this, but have you
heard me initiate any subject on my own on this show?
Yes.
When? What subject?
I mean, on different topics. When there's no callers, I've heard you initiate subjects.
I've read questions people sent in. I don't initiate any subjects.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well,
I've never initiated a subject on this show except that we're listener-supported. I initiate that point.
Let me ask you one last question.
Yep.
If you had a baby born today, on the first day of birth, would you knowingly allow that newborn baby to be injected with a hepatitis B vaccine in a hospital?
Of course not. That's why we had all our kids at home. We wouldn't let the doctors touch them.
Okay. Would you tell that to your audience, that not to allow the hospital to inject a newborn baby on the first day of birth with a hepatitis B vaccine?
You know, that's not an area of expertise of mine. Of course, I would think that any parent would not want their child to be injected with a hepatitis vaccine. But I don't study those things out. That's not my field. But I know something about them. I know enough about them to object to them. But that's, you don't seem to understand what this program is for. This program is for people who are interested in following Jesus, interested in knowing what Jesus said to do. He didn't say any of the things you're talking about.
Well, they didn't have chemtrails in Jesus' day. I think if Jesus
did, they have other days. Did they have other dangers? Did they have genocide? Did they have infanticide? They did, didn't they?
Well, he saw it enough to overturn the money changers, which is the Federal Reserve bankers of today. We should be overturning the tables of the Federal Reserve bankers who create.
Why? Why they're not in the temple, are they?
Oh, they are in the temple. They've totally taken over our churches. That's why many of your audience, they hate going to church, because church has become a business with money collection and profit and entertainment. And
okay, Stan. Hey, you know what?
That.
You've had a long time to rant. I'm going to have to take
you
up.
You're very kind to me. I appreciate it very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. By the way, I do think there are some problems that people have with churches, some of which are run like businesses. But it's been a long time since I've been in a church of any size that ranted about money as much as you're saying. I don't think it's the fact that they take an offering that drives people off. I think if people are driven off from churches, at least the ones I know who've been driven off, it's because the churches have not been teaching the Bible, but they've been trying to just cater to, the least committed people in the congregation in many cases. And the people I know who've been leaving the churches are people who are committed Christians looking for something that'll challenge them. So, Stan, you've just proved yourself wrong. I mean, you said that I wouldn't allow these subjects to be brought up on the show. You brought them up. I agreed with some of the things you said. But see, that's not my issue. Do I like chemtrails? No, I don't. Do I think chemtrails might kill us? Maybe. They might. But if not that, it'll be something else. You see, I'm not afraid to die. That's an important thing, maybe a difference between us. I don't consider death to be the worst thing that can happen to me. And it's not even the worst thing that can happen to other people. The worst thing that can happen to people is for them to die unprepared to meet God. Dying is a tragedy, but it's a universal tragedy. The human mortality rate is 100%. And so there's not going to be any reduction of the human mortality rate by getting rid of the chemtrails. I'd be glad to get rid of them. I don't like them. I don't like government tyranny. I don't like them doing, experimenting with us chemically behind our backs without telling us. I don't like those things. But the fact that I don't like them, there's lots of things I don't like, but this program is not for me an avenue for me to just get out and vent my spleen about everything I don't like. There are radio shows that do that. And I'm sure that they actually have a lot more listeners than I have. So, you know, you shouldn't be complaining that I'm not, you know, the one broadcasting this stuff. I've got a lot less of an audience than Alex Jones has. Our lines have been empty. That's one reason I let Stan go so long, is because we just have had a really, really slow day of calls. Now they're filling up a little bit. There's one line open, 1-800-438-5090. And Dave, if that's you asking me that question, they haven't sounded overly loud to me. Let's talk to Bob from Las Vegas next. Bob, welcome to the Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Steve. You're welcome. You know what? That brings up another question. Us as believers in the Word of God, do we get to a certain level when we learn and know and get to a place of awareness of God's Word? Are we obligated to stand and warn people?
About
if you're on the wrong side of the line at the end, you die. It's kind of what?
Well, it is our obligation to stand for Christ and make it clear to people that Christ is the Lord, and of course if people know that Christ is the Lord, then they know that they're either submitting to the Lord or rebelling against the Lord, because the word Lord means your owner and your master. So if people know that Christ is the Lord, then they know there's a line in the sand, and that line is on one side are those who are in rebellion against God, the King, the Lord. On the other side are those who are submitted to him. So I would think that as we proclaim and make plain to the world that Jesus is the Lord, it'll be plain to them also that they're either on the wrong side or the right side of that aisle. But as far as, if you mean stand on the street corners and start crying out to them warnings, I don't think everyone's called to do that. There may be some prophets like, Ezekiel or Jeremiah who are called to do that kind of thing, or John the Baptist. But most Christians didn't do that in biblical times, and I don't think that most Christians are called to do that in our time either. It is the case, though, that when we have opportunity to communicate with people and we know the danger they're in, it's good for us to let them know. But it's not always the most effective thing to just kind of stuff it in their face in a way that they may react negatively to, when we might be able to win them with a different approach. I mean, there's lots of ways to get people to come to Christ, and some of them involve talking, some of them involve demonstrating, and most of them probably involve a little of both.
Right, it's the opposite of wooing. I mean, you want to show all the benefits and the wonderfulness.
Yeah.
Of believing in God, and that he's great, and that his philosophy is the perfect description of living it harmoniously with each other forever.
Yep.
And that seems like the extreme side where we have to say, because we know it's like we're obligated to say, okay, well, the bottom line, and this is a warning. And the reason why I say that, Steve, is I've heard, I'm starting to learn that the Bible teaches in different bits. I'm such a novice. Please bear with me. That if we so much as wish them Godspeed, we are taking part in kind of a lie or deception. And I've heard other places where, you know, because we're at a level of understanding, it's our obligation to warn people. But it's that warning, it's that delivering the message that I don't want to push people further away, like you were just talking about.
Yeah.
Now,
well, the passage that says not to bid them Godspeed is in the second epistle of John, and it's talking specifically about people who are bringing a false gospel, people who are false preachers. It does say that we should not encourage them. We should not wish them Godspeed. We shouldn't in any way participate with them in their deeds. It's not saying that we shouldn't wish a blessing on everyone that we meet at the supermarket, even if they're not a Christian. I mean, they may be in danger. They may not be. But the main thing is, in our day and age, the culture has changed in quite a few ways from what it was when I was growing up. It used to be that if someone would just stand up and start preaching at a high school campus or a college campus or something, or on the street corner or in a park, people out of curiosity would come gather around and listen and maybe get evangelized. These days, I have a feeling that, you know, our culture has changed in ways that that wouldn't draw a crowd. I think it would just draw contempt, and that people need to be reached in a somewhat more winsome manner. But how to do so? I guess the main thing is to make sure that we're loving people, make sure that we're loving others more than we're loving ourselves. If so, then we will tell them what we think they need to hear, even if we're afraid they'll reject us.
You know, part of the message that we proclaim that it's so good is to not be offensive, is not be intrusive. You know, our approach and our delivering, what's so great about God, is to do it in a way that it is pleasing. And, I don't know if you remember me, Steve, but I'm really in that place where how do I not only be a good witness, but what do I say to people to get them to draw them in a positive way?
There's not just one thing I could say that would work in every case. But Paul said in Colossians, "Let your speech be with grace, seasoned with salt." So the main thing is you're speaking to people should be gracious, it should be with grace, and it should be seasoned with a bit of salt. There should be a bit of a bite to it. I mean, even if you're not an offensive person, the gospel is going to be offensive to some people. I mean, there's the offense of the cross that Paul spoke about. But, if you preach the gospel or share the Lord with somebody in a gracious and non-offensive way, but an uncompromising way, there's a good chance that some percentage of the people you talk to will be offended because they don't like Jesus. They don't like the message. But make sure that if they're offended, that they're offended by Jesus, not by you, not by something you're doing wrong.
Well, that's what I need to learn, how to be uncompromising, but not mean or abrupt or offensive.
That's a hard balance to strike.
I know. I'm working on it, Steve.
All right.
Great help. Thank you so much. God bless you, and I'll talk to you soon.
God bless you, Bob.
And in your teaching, where was it, Oregon?
In Washington, yeah.
In Washington. I wish I could go there. Anyway, Steve.
All right. God bless you, Bob.
Bye.
Bye now. Your next caller is Michael from Bothell, Washington, not far from where I'm sitting right now. I'm in Monroe. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Hi, Steve. I'm calling there in response. Well, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling in response to the whole conversation you had about mental illness. I grew up as a really anxious person in a family of my father was diagnosed bipolar. My mother was would be considered an anxiety, a panicked, near panic person. So I grew up with a lot of anxiety, and I think that I'm sort of waver from side to side. I know that when I've gone through real depression, the darkness or the it's not sadness. It's just a complete grayness that is just overwhelming. And my point is that so much of I think that there is a big spiritual dimension to it, for sure. When I was in my late singles, I started pulling my hair, and I developed what is known as trichotillomania. I used to pull my hair out so much that I had bald spots. And then later on in my life, I heard that, oh, people who have hair pulling, trichotillomania, usually have one parent who's bipolar, and they usually start between the age of 8 and 11. And that fit me perfectly, so I fit into, I saw things in retrospect, like, oh, that explains a lot. So there seems to be a genetic dimension or a tendency. So I think that's the problem, I think, sometimes is genetic tendencies can be made into genetic orders in the scientific world, where you almost like, people get the idea that they're ordered to do certain behaviors versus having certain situations where your tendency would be to do behaviors that are down a certain line, so you get anxious. And but anyway, I was on antidepressants for a long time, and I got off it. I started doing different techniques, like I've changed my breathing habits. I started praying a lot more, mm-hmm. and I've also been diagnosed with Asperger. I never could read people. I always felt like I was on the wrong planet. Mm. You know, I couldn't.
Well, Michael, what can I do for you here on the show?
Oh, I just wanted to place that there is a. It's like there seems to be a genetic component to mental illness, but I'm afraid that when we talk about it conversationally, like that is, you know, that it's not blah blah blah, you know, that I think that people can take it the wrong way for sure.
Okay, well, I think that we just need to know that there are two theories about mental illness. One is the therapeutic model, and one is what they call the moral model. And the therapeutic or medical model is that there is a genetic or a chemical or some other kind of physiological cause to what people call mental illnesses. And then there's another view, of course, that most or all of what we call mental illnesses are really simply what one psychiatrist who is not a Christian called it a psycho-spiritual overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
That was Peter Bregan, who wrote the book Toxic Psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a Christian. He's not doesn't have a Christian spirituality, but he's in the state of Maryland. He's a psychiatrist, been practicing for probably 40 years now, and he's written several books. But he believed that the medical model of these things is not accurate, and that the evidence from medical science is not very conclusive in that direction. He believed that all the evidence can be interpreted more than one way. One would be in a medical way, but another would be, as he called it, a psycho-spiritual overwhelm, mm-hmm. way, that it's more of a spiritual issue. Now, Christians would maybe call it spiritual and would see it possibly as a combination of things, depending on the case. Could be a spiritual attack from demons, or it could just be a personal failure to walk in the Spirit of God and to manage one's own spiritual life. Well, I'm not here to try to give the definitive answer about every case, but the evidence you gave about trichotillomania, usually the person has a bipolar parent. My former sister-in-law wrote a book on trichotillomania, and she had it, and her mother was institutionalized because of bipolar. So, I mean, it certainly fits that profile. But the point is that even that doesn't tell us whether it's a genetic thing or whether it's a reaction that's commonly made to children who are living with a parent who's got what they call bipolar affective disorder.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And I'm not here to tell you that I know all that stuff. I mean, that's pretty mysterious stuff. But I think that the medical model is kind of accepted uncritically by modern people, where there is reason to question it and to say, you know, there's a spiritual component here that may be the main component.
Yeah, well, I totally agree that people go to drugs way too fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is changes that you can make in your, like, son, you can make some changes in your diet.
Mm-hmm.
You can, you know, like, get off caffeine if you're anxious.
Right.
You
know, yeah.
You can change your, you can do breath retraining. You can mm-hmm. You can move to a place that maybe is a little more amenable to your moods, you know, like sunnier place if you live in a cloudy place.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that to do before you start fooling around with chemistry. So I think that's important.
Yeah.
My one question is about the whole thing about demons, you know, being demonized or whatever. I wanted to ask you, like, you know, percentages. I know you can't answer that. But it's like, would there be anything that people see differently between somebody who sometimes you feel like you're haunted by something mean or bad inside yourself? You know, I recently got baptized.
Uh-huh.
My feeling was, you know, I was a person who, you know, called up. I was a Jewish guy. And I actually went through the baptism. And my feeling was like, you know, Jesus, I finally accepted that Jesus was the Messiah. And as a Jew, I had to sort of follow that commandment, mm-hmm. Jesus' commandment. And I guess I feel like, you know, I have to, there's a dimension in me that always felt like I had something inside me pursuing me. And it's like, you know, what is that? That, you know, what? How do you know that something, that there's a demonic element in
well,
is there any way to tell? You know,
that's a good question, Michael. I would say if the problems are of a demonic origin, they can be defeated by calling out on the name of the Lord, by, you know, walking with Christ, by trusting in Christ,
mm-hmm.
By resisting the enemy, and so forth, if it's demonic in origin. If it's not demonic in origin, then those things might or might not have any effect upon it. Unfortunately, I don't have the expertise to be able to diagnose a person's condition over the phone on the radio. There certainly are people who are demon-possessed. I wouldn't be able to tell talking to someone on the phone whether they were in that condition or not, probably.
Oh, yeah, I'm not trying to get you.
Right, and there's not, to my knowledge, just a ABC test that, you know, check these things out and then you'll know. This is something that requires discernment, which is a ministry of the Holy Spirit. I would think that if I were worried about the possibility of demons pestering me, I'd want to go probably talk to some godly, mature person and go through probably a more prolonged kind of a dialogue than we could have here on the air, unfortunately. I do believe in the reality of demon possession. I believe that that is a problem to many people. I'm just not in the position on the radio to be able to tell someone whether they likely are in that condition or not.
Yeah, I was just curious about that, you know, that idea. Anyway, I don't want to keep you hold you up. I just want to say that one of the best things I've ever heard was that a neurotic, the problem with a neurotic is a person who wants everything, is so greedy that they want everything at once and so they are completely dissatisfied with life.
Uh-huh.
So I've always felt like that really says a lot about
the Michael, condition. Just on a humorous note, who do people tell you sound like?
I don't know.
Don't people ever tell you sound like somebody? You sound just like somebody who's famous.
Oh, well, Woody Allen?
Yep.
I had a friend the other ago. He said, you know, I never knew that there was actually a person that Woody Allen's a real person. I said, yeah, I grew up in New York. And there's a lot of us.
You've called me a couple times. I thought, did Woody Allen change his name?
That's funny. That's what somebody told me. He says,
hey, brother.
I come out with statements that are like black humor.
Yeah.
I come out and say, oh, God, it feels like a tomb. And they say, that's something that Woody Allen would say.
So, okay.
Anyway, thanks a lot for your time.
God bless you, Michael.
I really appreciate your show, and also I appreciate the recordings you have online. I'm going through the Matthew series, and that is incredible.
Hey,
yeah.
Oh, good, good. Also, try out the Spiritual Warfare series. That might help you with some of the questions you're asking.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, God bless you.
God bless you.
Bye now. Okay, our next caller is going to be Darcel from Seattle, Washington. Darcel, you just got on. Welcome.
Hi, Steve.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Fine.
Good. I hope to get up there to see you at Monroe. So.
Yeah.
So actually, you're here now, correct?
I am in Monroe right now.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I want to kind of turn the corner here a little bit, and I am reading through Acts, and my question is in Acts 16:19, where they made the decision about the Gentiles to write the letter to abstain from things polluted by idols.
That'd be 15, chapter 15, yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, chapter 15, yes. From sexual immorality and from things strangled and from blood.
Yeah.
And then, so that's repeated twice in chapter 15, then also Paul repeats it in Acts 21, verse 25. And so my question is, what is applicable to us today as Christians? Because I know later on Paul told the Corinthians, you know, we know that an idol is nothing.
Yeah.
And if foods were sold in the marketplace just to eat them without asking questions. So if this was really a important thing for the Gentiles, how does that apply or does it apply to us today? And then I will take the answer off the air.
Okay, Darcy, thanks for your call.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
Bye now. Yeah, when the Jerusalem Council met to decide on what they should expect the Gentile Christians to do, it was decided that they did not have to do anything that the Jewish law required, but that they did have to, they were asking the Gentiles to change their behavior in a few ways. They said, to, you know, of course, to give up fornication, which is a normal part of Gentile life in the Roman Empire. I mean, fornication wasn't even considered to be a vice in pagan Rome. So they had to give up fornication, and they wanted to stop eating blood and meat sacrificed to idols and things that are strangled. Now, of those things, only one of them was forbidden in the law. Eating blood was forbidden in the law, but the rest of those things were never specifically forbidden in the law. But these were not put, this was not putting the Gentiles under law. This is asking the Gentiles to stop doing things that particularly offended their Jewish neighbors. And that was the reason that it would be given. It says in verse 21, for Moses had through many generations those who preach him in every city, being read in the synagogues every Sabbath. Now, what they're saying is we're asking the Gentiles, because they live in the same communities with Jewish people, and these Jewish people have heard Moses read in their synagogues every Sabbath for generation after generation. The Jews have these sensitivities about many things, and they look upon Gentiles as just wicked, dirty, unclean things because of the habits that the Gentiles have. And so they're asking the Gentile Christians to not feed that prejudice, to not do these objectionable things in front of their Jewish neighbors, because, frankly, James, who's giving these orders, is hoping to reach the Jews. And he figures, you know, if the Christian Gentiles are doing things that are disgusting to the Jews, it's going to close the Jews down to the message of the gospel. And it's just the same idea that Paul expressed in chapters 8 through 11, or 8 through 10 of 1 Corinthians, about not unnecessarily doing things that are offensive to people so that you can win them. So, you know, the things strangled and things like that, Jesus said it's not what goes into a man's mouth that defiles him. It's what comes out of his mouth. So the things you eat aren't the issue to God, but they are the issue to some people. And because they were the issue to the Jews in every city, they were asking the Gentile Christians not to do those things because they were hoping to keep the lines of communication with the Jews open and hopefully win them. And so I think they saw these things as particular obstacles to that goal. I'm sorry I'm out of time. I could talk about this longer if we had the time. You've been listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg. We're a listener-supported ministry, and if you'd like to help us pay the radio bills, the address is The Narrow Path, P.O. Box 3633, Santa Cruz, California, 95063. Our website is thenarrowpath.com. Thanks for joining us. I hope you'll tune in again tomorrow, and we'll finish out our broadcast week. God bless.